You're tuned in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. We're on the air because truth matters. Your host is Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. To find out more about CRI or to order resources, go online to equip.org. The Bible tells us that natural evil, including animal suffering, is a consequence of the fall of humanity and Adam. The book of nature, on the other hand, tells us that the earth and universe are old, and thus animal suffering preceded the arrival of humans. How do we resolve this dilemma? To discuss this, Hank welcomes back Dr. William Dembski to the broadcast, who offers a fresh look at the problem of evil in his book, The End of Christianity: Finding a Good God in an Evil World. Today's broadcast is an encore presentation. And now, to start today's Bible Answer Man broadcast, is your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and I want to talk about what you just said. Because the sharpest point of contention between young and old earth creation is death before Adam. Young earthers hold all death, including animal death, to be a function of the fall. Old earth creationists believe that carnivorous creatures and natural catastrophes existed prior to the sin of Adam as part and parcel of God's very good creation. And one of the reasons that we're offering the book that we're offering is perhaps the rift is unnecessary. The false assumption underlying the debate is that Adam's sin necessarily precedes the advent of all evil. Of course, we're not talking about the rebellion of Satan here. And as a result of that, young earthers are constrained to reject astronomical and geological dating, while old earthers are compelled to reinterpret biblical passages that speak of natural evil as a direct consequence of human sin. The reality is this: orthodoxy demands faithfulness to truth in both general and special revelation. An orthodox understanding of the creator of all things is that he acts transtemporally in creation. And therefore the cross of Christ can retroactively atone for Adam's sin, just as it proactively atones for the sin of Adam's posterity yet unborn. In similar fashion, there is little difficulty conceiving of a transcendent God who predestines natural evil to precede the fall, even though the fall is the necessary cause of the evils that precede it. Of course, it's natural for us as humans to see time's arrow from a forward perspective. But we would do well to recognize that God's infallible truth is not always presented in chronological fashion. And as such, the advent of the last Adam not only can atone for the sins thousands of years after the advent of the first Adam, but the last Adam is biblically portrayed as a lamb slain from the creation of the world. The bottom line is this: mining the scripture for all its wealth entails recognition that God's purposes are presented in chronological as well as chirological fashion. I'm going to ask Bill Dembski about that word chirological in just a few moments. Bill Dembski is a leader in the intelligent design movement. He's very well equipped to write on the subject that we'll be discussing today. He's a research professor in philosophy at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas. He's a senior fellow with the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. He's a highly regarded mathematician. He's a philosopher. He's done postdoctoral work at MIT, the University of Chicago, and Princeton University, and he has authored more than a dozen books, including The Design Inference and No Free Lunch. And he's also the author of an article in the Christian Research Journal, which I personally think is one of the clearest, most poignant articles we've ever presented, titled Old Earth Creationism and the Fall. And that ultimately is the issue that I want to discuss today. It's an issue that, as I said at the beginning of the broadcast, has caused perhaps an unnecessary rift among creationists. And so instead of looking at the real enemy, which is naturalism, Darwinian evolution, the guns have been aimed at one another. And we're losing a war that we should be winning in an age of scientific enlightenment. This is one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about this book, The End of Christianity. And there's a twist in the title. It sounds like one thing, it means another. I suppose intentionally so. The subtitle, however, gives us a hint of why this book is so important: Finding a Good God in an Evil World. And again, I cannot urge you strongly enough to get this book, to read this book, because how one views their origins ultimately will determine how they live their life. And there are so many people today who simply don't know how to think about the issue of origins. On the one hand, they look at astronomical data or geological data, and they see an old universe. And yet, they read in Scripture that Adam's fall is the necessary cause of all evil, and they just can't swallow the notion that evil prior to the fall is not evil. And so they're scratching their heads. They don't know what to do. This book gives a plausible solution to the problem. It's orthodox. It corresponds to reality. And it ultimately allows us to put ourselves in a position where we can maintain both scientific orthodoxy and scriptural orthodoxy. And that's where we want to be as believers. So the first thing you want to do is make sure you get a copy of this book. The retail of this book is $22.99, so it's an expensive book. It's a hardback book. We've taken a real step of faith to just give this to you for your gift to the ministry. So we're praying that you'll be generous, because we need the generosity of people to keep the work going. But you can order a number of different ways. One is on the World Wide Web at equip.org. Another is by simply writing me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, or simply picking up the telephone and calling 888-7000-CRI. This is another privilege to have Bill Dembski on the air, talking about The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World. Good to have you back, Bill.
Good to be back with you.
This is such a significant issue. You have, no doubt, as I have, run into so many people who want to maintain theological integrity. The fall seems to account for all evil. And yet, you look at the data, you look at star life, for example, and immediately you think, wow, how's it possible that we live in a 6,000-year-old universe?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, because I think what you have to say is, if science is completely wrong about this, then we are basically seeing just a light show where there are no stars or anything behind it, because the science is telling us that light travels at a constant speed and that we're seeing light from galaxies, star systems that are hundreds of millions of light years away. So that light would have had to travel a long, long time.
And what about people that say to you, well, here's the solution. God created his handiwork with the appearance of age, which is, by the way, one of the subjects you address in the book.
Right. I think it just leads to the question, though, about God's revelation in nature, and is God being forthright there? And what does that do about the honesty of God? Now, I think There's a sense in which perhaps, you know, if Adam, you know, I believe that Adam was specially created, okay, so there will be, he'll be a full-grown man. But if he's a full-grown man, is there going to be any genetic evidence that he has aged? Or, you know, that, I think, even if you have something that is mature, it doesn't seem to me that you have to put marks of, deceptive marks of age there. And I think that's what we would be dealing with in the science if, for instance, in fact, we're not seeing any further than 6,000 years out, and basically this is just a light show that God has made for us, and there really are no stars out there, or maybe there are, but, you know, it's that history is all bogus. I think that's the question. Is nature speaking truly to us? And I think that is an important issue, and one that the scriptures themselves indicate are an important issue. Romans 1:20 came up where, you know, Paul is saying that from nature, from the creation, we can tell certain things about the invisible attributes of God, that God is a God of glory, that God by wisdom has created the world. Well, if nature is not speaking to us truly, then how can we even draw those sorts of inferences? So I think it becomes a double-edged sword if you try to maintain this appearance of age, because I think it can end up biting you in the back later.
How significant, Bill, is this issue of the fall from your perspective? There are so many progressive creationists who are saying, look, what happened prior to the fall is part of God's very good creation. Why is it that you can't stomach that?
Well, it just seems to me, you know, and I came to this through the study of intelligent design, and I mean, I'm looking at signs of intelligence in the natural world, and are there patterns in nature that point us to a transcendent intelligence? And I think there's very good evidence of that. But I look also what the stumbling blocks have been for people accepting that position. And probably the biggest one is the problem of evil, evil in nature. And there's an interesting contrast here. I mean, you look at, for instance, at William Paley. He's watch in the field. You know, if you find a watch, you're going to infer a designer there. It's a very common watchmaker argument. Well, 50 years later, Darwin takes that argument apart, or claims to, but where he really focuses on is the problem of evil and suffering in nature. If you read Paley's Natural Theology, the biggest chapter is the second to the last chapter. It's about twice as long as any other chapter there. And basically he says, yeah, after all, he goes through all the wonderful things in nature. He says, you know, yeah, there's some death and suffering, but it's really pretty short. Animals don't suffer very long. And he tries to put a nice touch on it. Charles Darwin takes a trip around the world, 5-year trip on the HMS Beagle, and sees the sort of brutality and violence that's out there, humans against humans, but then also within nature. And when you look at some of the things that are going on in nature, it's not just that things are dying or getting sick, but that you've got parasites that seem exquisitely designed to upset a organism. That, I think, really, that's where I think you really get some problems. So it seems that can't just dismiss it as though, well, it's something that's, it's really not that bad, and it's not really morally significant because humans are really not suffering it. In fact, I mean, I would say, you know, the evil that we see in nature, those become our prime metaphors for understanding evil. I mean, when John the Baptist will say, "You brood of vipers," you know, I mean, it's things in nature that, as it were, God has put there as a mirror to our own, the sin in our hearts. But that mirror does represent real evil.
That, by the way, is a profound insight, and it's one of the things that you'll find in this book, one profound insight after the other. Darwin did say that. He said, "I can't persuade myself that a beneficent, omnipotent God would have designedly created parasitic wasps with the express intention of their feeding within the living bodies of caterpillars." And that conundrum ultimately led Darwin to dispense with the notion of a creator God. In reality, however, Adam, not the Almighty, bears culpability for the origin of moral and natural evil in the world. We're going to be talking about that and so much more when we continue the discussion with Bill Dembski on the other side of the break. Again, Dr. Dembski is author of The End of Christianity. Chuck Colson says this, inevitably it is the pernicious problem of pain and evil that the atheists, that the agnostics refer to as an excuse for not believing in God. And Bill Dembski clears away the stumbling block, offers readers an original way of dealing with the problem, which fits with an orthodox view of God's good creation and fits the scientific facts. Again, the book is available as our gift for your support of the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. So please be generous as you order The End of Christianity at www.equip.org. We'll be right back with more of Bill Dembski. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. In return for your support, we'd like to help equip you with The End of Christianity by William Dembski. Until recently, every Christian accepted that natural evil was a result of the fall and our own sin. Then evolution undermined the confidence of multiplied millions. Science seemed to show that animals suffered and died long before the fall. But Dr. Dembski argues persuasively that for a God who exists outside of time, all evil, including natural evil, is the result of human sin, whether the earth is old or young. To donate, call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Don't change the station. The Bible Answer Man broadcast will continue after this.
When looking at the night sky, you're not just looking at stars and planets. You're looking at the very fingerprints of God. The cosmos presents irrefutable evidence of God's design, genius, and majesty. You'll find this evidence in The Privileged Planet by Jay Richards. The Privileged Planet presents an amazing supply of evidence to show that our planet is perfectly fit not only to support life, but also to point to the existence of the giver of life. You're taken on a scientific odyssey from a history of tectonic plates and solar eclipses to our location in the Milky Way, the laws that govern the universe, and much more. It will prove that not only do science and faith mix, but science points to faith. The Privileged Planet, available on DVD right now when you call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go to equip.org.
Have you ever been asked the question, if God is good, why is there so much evil and suffering in the world? As Christians, how should we respond to this question? In his book, The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World, Dr. William Dembski writes to make peace with three claims. God, by wisdom, created the world out of nothing. God exercises particular providence in the world. And all evil in the world ultimately traces back to human sin. In the process, Dembski brings the reader to a fresh understanding of what the end result of Christianity really means. The radical realignment of our thinking so that we see God's goodness in creation, despite the distorting effects of sin in our hearts and evil in the world. Order The End of Christianity from the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. When Charles Darwin was writing his famed The Origin of Species, it was well known at the time that the first fossils of animals appeared suddenly and without predecessors. So there was a deep dilemma about what his theory told him to expect to find and the facts. Darwin's Dilemma on DVD explores the mystery of the Cambrian explosion and the scientific controversy that still surrounds it. Where are the missing transitional forms that Darwin's theory requires? Can any undirected evolutionary process explain the origin of animals? Filmed on four continents, this fascinating documentary examines some of the most important fossil discoveries ever made. The Cambrian explosion was actually an explosion of biological information that points unmistakably unmistakably to foresight, purpose, and intelligent design. Order Darwin's Dilemma, The Mystery of the Cambrian Fossil Record from CRI by calling 888-7000-274 or online at equip.org. Have you ever been asked the question, if God is good, why is there so much evil and suffering in the world? As Christians, how should we respond to this question? In his book, The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World, William Dembski writes to make peace with three claims. God, by wisdom, created the world out of nothing. God exercises particular providence in the world. And all evil in the world ultimately traces back to human sin. In the process, Dr. Dembski brings the reader to a fresh understanding of what the end result of Christianity really means, the radical realignment of our thinking so that we see God's goodness in creation, despite the distorting effects of sin in our hearts and evil in the world. As our way of saying thank you for your generous support, we'll send you The End of Christianity by William Dembski. Contact the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Once again, here's the host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and we'll also send you Old Earth Creationism in the Fall, which is William Dembski's article in the Christian Research Journal, so you'll get both those for your support of the ministry. The End of Christianity, again, the book, subtitled Finding a Good God in an Evil World, and the article Old Earth Creationism in the Fall. Back to the discussion with Dr. William Dembski on the book, The End of Christianity. And before we get too much farther into the discussion, it bears repeating the title of your book. What's the point?
Well, it's a play on words. I mean, the end there, end can mean the demise. And I think a lot of the atheists would like to read it that way, as the demise of Christianity. But I took it as the purpose or end goal. Where is it all going? What's it all about? And so that's what I was referring to with the end of Christianity.
And, of course, the book does deal with a word that many people are not familiar with, but theodicy. How could a good God create a world in which things go so desperately wrong? In other words, we're dealing with the problem of good and evil that we encounter in the world. And at first blush, it may seem as though there are as many responses to that question as there are religions. But truthfully, there are only three. Pantheism denies the existence of good and evil because God is all and all is God. And then, of course, philosophical naturalism, which is the worldview that undergirds evolutionism, it supposes that everything is a function of natural processes, brain chemistry, genetics, and the like. Therefore, there is no good, there is no evil. So we come to the conclusion that theism alone has a relevant response and only Christian theism has a satisfactory response. But it seems that evangelicals or people within the evangelical Christian world are mucking things up. And I want to read a quote that you have in the book, Bill, that quote is from Tony Campolo, where he says, God has chosen to not be all-powerful. If God were in control of everything, there would be no such thing as human freedom. In the economy of God, love is more important than power, and therefore the loving God, in order to give us the capacity to love, has limited power, and thus when there are tragedies, he's the first one who cries. What kind of a God is this? What does that do to our fundamental concept of who God is?
Well, I think Tony is moving in this whole open theism, process theism approach, which has very much taken the evangelical, at least certain portions of the evangelical intellectuals, by storm. And it seems to me that that position is just incoherent. I mean, you can't, it certainly doesn't agree with the Christian tradition orthodoxy here. I mean, there's just no way. I mean, divine omnipotence, that God is sovereign, that he is in control, that everything, that he's almighty, that everything is subject to him. I think that's been that's been orthodoxy across the board, Protestant, Eastern Orthodox, Catholic, right along. But this idea, I mean, you know, the classic notion is that God simply restrains himself. He does not interfere with human freedom, or he allows people to muck up things, you know. But to say that God has as it were, removed, you know, has put himself in a prison, thrown away the key, and now he can't get out, it seems to me that that's just incoherent. So, Tony, I've watched him over the years. I mean, he had a book in 1984, The Power Delusion, which I actually enjoyed, where this theme of power came up. And I think, yes, in the life of Jesus, Jesus didn't flatten the Romans. He did restrain his power. But it's one thing to restrain one's power. It's another thing to give it up entirely. And so in that passage you read afterwards, I make the comparison with King Lear, who did give up the power, and then suddenly things spin out of control. I mean, the problem with this view is if God has really given up the power and we are free, what guarantees are there that God is going to be able to pull it off, that love will triumph? It's a position that I think really doesn't offer any hope in the end.
There are people, though, Dr. Dembski, who will look at your book and think, you know what, you've got a problem as well, because you have a benevolent God who allows natural evil to afflict the world prior to Adam's sin. How in the world is that a coherent view of God?
Well, I mean, if you're going to take that view, then I think you're also going to have to find fault with God for allowing evil in families where parents sin and it affects their children. I mean, it seems that somehow in this life, humans are at the pinnacle. They are the covenant heads, and what they do does affect the rest of creation. And it's this is the way the world has been structured. I don't think I've got anything really much more to offer beyond that. I mean, God, we're all complicit in this life, so God includes us all together, and the animal world as well. And the animal world suffers because of the sin of Adam. But I mean, I think the broader theological issue there is that God is doing this to bring good out of this, and I think that an important theme here is that natural evil is allowed because it points up our own evil, the evil in our hearts. We need, as it were, natural evil to keep us honest, to bring us to our senses. What would happen in a world in which we are fallen, corrupt human beings, but there is no natural evil? We don't get sick. We can live out our lusts, live out our evil desires, and do so without any restraint, without anything to bring us back to sobriety. That's actually, I think, a very terrifying prospect. So natural evil, if you will, is a grace. I mean, it's and what we said in the earlier portion of this program, you know, that this natural evil is a mirror to our own selves. I mean, you think about the scriptures. I mean, all the images of evil, the wolf in sheep's clothing, you know, the wolf. I mean, that's something from nature. The serpent, you brood of vipers, the snake in the Garden of Eden. I mean, so there are these images. They're really primal, taken from nature, that point up evil. And I think it's part of, if you will, God's school in educating us and bringing us to our senses.
I thought there was a profound insight in the book, and I can't remember exactly where it was, but perhaps I can lead you to think about this aloud with our audience for a couple of moments. But the profound insight was somewhere in the book where there was this aha moment. Adam and Eve, they sin, and now they don't have to wonder what the consequences of sin would be like. They're cast into a world where they see it up close and personal. They're brought face to face with the gravity of their sin because it is already extant.
Well, yes. I mean, I think perhaps the passage or the chapter you're referring to is the one where I do an interpretation of Genesis 1 through 3. And the question is, I mean, if indeed we have our fall is responsible for natural evil, but natural evil still precedes the fall. I mean, this is where it gets a little bit science fiction-y. I mean, you've got backward causation, as it were. But from a divine vantage, it's not a problem because God is, as we said, transtemporal. He's not bound by time. Indeed, He created time. So if God anticipates the fall through the fall in nature with natural evil, then where does that evil reside as Adam and Eve come on the scene? And this is a point I make then in that chapter that I'm referring to. You've got Adam and Eve, they're put in a garden. Now, the garden, paradise, I mean, there are a lot of primal images and metaphors connected with that. But why does God put them in this segregated area when, on a young earth view, for instance, I mean, the whole world, everything is perfect, you know? But they're put in this garden, and then when they get ejected from the garden, they want to go back, but the angels block them, and now they're in a world with thorns and natural evil. And so it seems to me that there are even exegetical grounds for this retroactive view of the fall that I describe in the book.
And, of course, one of the things that we want to learn to do is read the Bible for all it's worth, or, as I like to say, mine the Bible for all its wealth. And this, again, becomes a critical issue. We're talking about the issue of origins. I've said it before. It bears repeating: how one views their origins will inevitably determine how they live their life. We are now in a world in which evolutionism, for all intents and purposes, is winning the war. And they ought to be losing the war because we live in an age of scientific enlightenment. Many of the things that Darwin supposed might be true turn out to be false. The Cambrian explosion, for example, biology's Big Bang, uprooted Darwin's tree of life. So Darwin is left hanging. And we have an opportunity to demonstrate that evolution does not correspond to reality, that creationism does correspond to reality, that it does satisfactorily deal with the problem of evil, that we are headed for the best of all possible worlds, that we have a God who is intending to reconcile all things to Himself, that though we live in pain and suffering, and Christianity doesn't give us a peaceful way to come to terms with the maladies of life, it does give us something far greater, because out of creation will come recreation. This universe that now groans in travail will be liberated from its bondage to decay. We ourselves will arise immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. So we have a story to tell. But we want to make sure that that story is cogent and coherent, that it doesn't simply gloss over the facts, either biblically with respect to the fall or scientifically with respect to what the world tells us about God's imprimatur on it. The book, The End of Christianity, does a wonderful job of reconciling the issues, giving you the ability to communicate in an age of scientific enlightenment with scriptural integrity, to use your well-reasoned answer as an opportunity, a springboard, if you will, for sharing the truth, the love, the grace that only Jesus Christ can bring to the human heart. The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World, available right now for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute. You can check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org, or just call our resource consultants, 888-7000-CRI. Be right back.
Theodicy, the defense of God's goodness and omnipotence in view of the existence of evil, is a problem many theologians and philosophers have undertaken to solve. Dr. William Dembski offers a fresh look at the problem of evil in his book, The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World. For your gift to the Christian Research Institute, we'll send you The End of Christianity by William Dembski. Simply call 888-7000-CRI, which translates to 888-7000-274. Or go online to equip.org. Again, that's equip.org. Or by mail, P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast will be right back in a few moments. When Charles Darwin was writing his famed The Origin of Species, it was well known at the time that the first fossils of animals appeared suddenly and without predecessors. So there was a deep dilemma about what his theory told him to expect to find and the facts. Darwin's Dilemma on DVD explores the mystery of the Cambrian explosion and the scientific controversy that still surrounds it. Where are the missing transitional forms that Darwin's theory requires? Can any undirected evolutionary process explain the origin of animals? Filmed on four continents, this fascinating documentary examines some of the most important fossil discoveries ever made. The Cambrian explosion was actually an explosion of biological information, information that points unmistakably to foresight, purpose, and intelligent design. Order Darwin's Dilemma, The Mystery of the Cambrian Fossil Record from CRI by calling 888-7000-274 or online at equip.org. Have you ever been asked the question, if God is good, why is there so much evil and suffering in the world? As Christians, how should we respond to this question? In his book, The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World, Dr. William Dembski writes to make peace with three claims. God, by wisdom, created the world out of nothing. God exercises particular providence in the world. And all evil in the world ultimately traces back to human sin. In the process, Dembski brings the reader to a fresh understanding of what the end result of Christianity really means. The radical realignment of our thinking so that we see God's goodness in creation, despite the distorting effects of sin in our hearts and evil in the world. Order The End of Christianity from the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.
When looking at the night sky, you're not just looking at stars and planets. You're looking at the very fingerprints of God. The cosmos presents irrefutable evidence of God's design, genius, and majesty. You'll find this evidence in The Privileged Planet by Jay Richards. The Privileged Planet presents an amazing supply of evidence to show that our planet is perfectly fit not only to support life, but also to point to the existence of the giver of life. You're taken on a scientific odyssey from a history of tectonic plates and solar eclipses to our location in the Milky Way, the laws that govern the universe, and much more. It will prove that not only do science and faith mix, but science points to faith. The Privileged Planet, available on DVD right now when you call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go to equip.org.
The problem of evil has been a nagging dilemma for Christianity since the beginning. Today, popular atheists like Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, and others use it as a way of discrediting Christianity and eliminating the God of the Bible. William Dembski's book, The End of Christianity, embraces the challenge to formulate a theodicy that is both faithful to Christian orthodoxy and credible to the new mental environment. For your gift to the Christian Research Institute, we'll send you The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World by William Dembski. Order toll-free at 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Let's return to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Here once again is Hank Hanegraaff.
Again, I want to devote my time to talking to William Dembski about this book. It's a very important book. I've devoted broadcast to this book for a reason. I think you should read this book. That's the bottom line. The book is replete with all kinds of interesting twists and turns. And one of them, Bill, is the Chinese parable that you write about in the chapter titled Thanking God for All Things. And in this chapter, you grapple with the issue of whether something is good or whether it is bad. And sometimes when we think
in that way, we're enslaved to life circumstances and we don't see things as they really are. Cash out this Chinese parable for us.
Yeah. Well, it's one that's made the rounds. I think the way I heard it initially is you have this Chinese peasant who has a son, and they have the good fortune to get a donkey. And you know, and the neighbors say, "Oh, that's good. Isn't that great?" And then the son rides the donkey and breaks his foot, and it's like, "Oh, that's bad." And the son afterwards is crippled and can't really do what he had done before. And then the next thing is that the Chinese warlord comes through and conscripts all the young people, but because this son is now a cripple, he doesn't get conscripted. And so the neighbors say, "Oh, that's good." And then indeed, the Chinese warlord, all these young people that he conscripted die in battle. And so it seems like it's a good thing. But you can keep playing this, you know, this story up and back. I mean, what happens if a plague goes through the town and then wipes out everybody, or you know, or maybe it's maybe the son is gets a slow lingering disease that kills him very painfully? Wouldn't it have been better just to have died in battle gloriously? So what this parable really points up is that our judgments of good and evil, what is good, what is evil, are themselves can be very flawed. And in fact, in a fallen world, and when humans like ourselves who are fallen make these judgments of good and evil, we may be very wrong about that. We may not see things anything in the way that God sees them. I mean, and you can think of it, think of the Joseph story. You know, at the end in Genesis 50, Joseph's brothers are all concerned about, will Joseph now do them in now that their father is gone? And, you know, the famous comment by Joseph is, yeah, you meant it for evil. I mean, you really did mean it for evil. You know, you did not have my best interest at heart. But God meant it for good. And so I think, you know, in a fallen world, the purposes of man and the purposes of God and how they all work together, it's something that we have a hard time seeing. And that's why I often come back in my own thinking to Proverbs 3, where, you know, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. I think, and this is really another point at the close of the book. I mean, it's one thing to go through an intellectual exercise. In a sense, I think we have to do it. I mean, is it even coherent to talk about an old earth in which there's a fall traditionally understood, and yet evil, natural evil, predates the fall? And I think this book does make a case for that, and it makes a case that old earth creationism is theologically orthodox, that it can maintain a traditional view of the fall. But you know, once you go through the intellectual exercise, then you still have to confront the problem of evil in your life, and it's that existential problem of evil. How do we deal with it? You know, and when we're confronted with the things of this life, how do we judge them? How do we see God's hand in this? What is God doing there? And you know, I think all of us deal with these things at one level or another. I think you described one of your, I think, was a grandchildren who recently passed away, and you know, so you know, that's difficult, and I think just, you know, there's, when something like this happens, there's no argument, no set of words that you can punch out on a laptop computer and then print it off and say, "Here, read this, you'll feel better." You know, it doesn't work that way. And yet, at some deep level, I think we can still trust that God is working His good purposes. But I think that's where faith comes in, because we don't have the God's eye view. We don't see how it all hangs together. We don't see Kairos and Chronos and how they mesh. And so it's that's really the challenge. So even with this work, you know, and I think with all the work that I've seen out there on theodicy, I think it's necessary. We do need to put our thinking caps on. We do need to show that there's no fundamental inconsistency between what the Bible says and the existence of God and the existence of evil in the world. I mean, that's the big deal, right? If God exists, God is all-powerful, God is all-good, and then whence evil? You know, but I think for me, if you want a quick response to it, my favorite is Boethius in the 5th century. He writes, "If God exists, whence evil?" Okay, that's the problem of evil. But whence good if God does not exist? You know, and the problem with evil is that the problem of evil presupposes that there is good in the world. Evil is always parasitic on a good. It's always a twisting, a perversion of a good. And so, I've always found that a helpful insight. And yet, all of these insights, you know, when you deal with evil as it actually smacks you in the face, you need something more than just insights. You need faith.
Yeah, amen. And, you know, this is not something, again, that's just an ivory tower discussion, as you just pointed out. I mean, we all face. I lost a grandchild. I lost a child. We face the evils, the maladies of life. And then we come to that crucial point in our life and we ask why. And we want satisfying answers. And the Bible does provide us with satisfying answers. Again, one more reason that I'm so passionate about the book. I'm talking to William Dembski. He's the author of The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World. Let's take one call for Bill Doug. He's listening in Canada, Calgary, Alberta, Canada, CHRB. Hi, Doug. You're on with Bill Dembski.
I'm calling, the long story. But the short question is simply this. Why does God expect of me what he doesn't expect of himself? In other words, 50,000 children die every day of starvation and disease. That's a lot of rotting flesh. And yet he could stop it in a moment, and we're talking tsunamis and all the rest of it. So very simply put, in my small way, he expects me to help a little old lady across the street and help humanity, maybe gather food for those that are hungry and visit the people that are in jail, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, he's had 2,000 years to prove a point. And so why does God expect of me to improve the world, and yet, with all his power, he doesn't expect it of himself? That's my question.
Well, it's a good question, but I think what's in the background there is a magical view of divine action, that God is just this magician, that he can do all this stuff, and then he's simply not doing it. And I think what's really going on is that you have a world in which God does work, but the way he works is ultimately it's not in this sort of magical, all-powerful way. It's when people go to help the tsunami victims, or there's a church I've been involved with in the Waco area, which instantly was there after the Haiti earthquake. That was God there working through these people. I mean, if you read Matthew 25, parable of the sheep and the goats, the sheep, you visited me in prison. You visited me there. He was there in the prison experiencing the pain. I mean, that's the whole point of the incarnation, that God does know what we're going through, that he's experienced it, and that he's also acting through these instruments of mercy, these people. And in fact, those who are not exercising the mercy are not the ones who are those are the ones who are rejecting him and rejecting his influence. So, I think God has decided to work in certain ways, and I think the reason ultimately is that we are sinners, and it's not enough simply to, as it were, do the magic wand thing and then let all the problems disappear. We have to experience the consequences of our sin to be brought out of it, because otherwise it just becomes too easy. I think the gravity of human sin is a terrible thing, and the cost of it, as Christians we say, we see the cost ultimately paid on the cross. But I don't think there are any easy answers here, but it's not that God is abdicating anything or that God is asking us to do anything that he wouldn't, because insofar as we're helping those old ladies across the street, it is God working in us.
Let's see if we can sneak in one more call. The call's got to be short, and the answer has to be even shorter. See if it's possible. Dennis, he's listening on Sirius XM 131, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. My question goes to whether or not the Earth, God could have created the universe with the appearance of age. And I did hear your summary about the starlight, and it may be robbing glory from God, so to speak. But you could use that same explanation, or could you use that same explanation with God robbing the glory from creating man fully grown, or the trees from fully grown, you know, or could he have bent science just for that that simple fact?
Well, you know, when you stay fully grown, it seems that that's a different matter from the appearance of age. I mean, if you did a genetic analysis of Adam, presumably at the moment of creation, it would not have shown any sort of degeneration as we might find for us now. I mean, I'm 51. So appearance of age and appearance of maturity, I think, are two separate things. And then I think there's just a, you know, if you push, though, the appearance of age, what you quickly get are false histories. And it becomes also a problem in sort of historical apologetics that I want to do. I want to take the findings of archaeology and say, yeah, that shows that the Israelites, that there was an Exodus. Yeah, that shows that what's said in Genesis 12 and following about Abraham is accurate. Well, if I'm going to do a historical apologetics, I'm dealing with the appearance of age. And then at some point, though, it seems that that appearance of age argument says, well, yeah, okay, but if we go further back, there's an appearance of age, but really there's no history there. So, yeah, it's okay up to, you know, 2000 B.C. or 2400 B.C., but when Noah comes on the scene, can't use that argument anymore. That just seems highly artificial. It doesn't, you know, and it's ruinous to the sort of evidential apologetic that I would certainly want to do, and which I think is essential that we do in this day and age to confront the atheists and agnostics who say that the Bible is bunk and that there's really no history there.
And I want to say a big thank you on behalf of our audience, Bill Dembski, for being on the broadcast. You've enriched us, enlightened us, and helped us to think more clearly about the infallible repository of redemptive revelation and the Book of Nature. Thank you, Bill.
Well, Hank, thank you so much. It was a wonderful opportunity to be with you.
And as always, we are so thankful for those that make this broadcast a reality. We do want to once again emphasize the end of Christianity as a resource, finding a good God in an evil world, for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute. And we do include Old Earth Creationism in the Fall, which is a summary of the book in the Christian Research Journal. Both resources available for your gift. Check it out on the World Wide Web, dequip.org. When you write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, or pick up the phone, dial 888-7000 CRI. Time went too quickly. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you right back here, Lord willing, on tomorrow's edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. We'd like to thank William Dembski for joining us today. For your gift to the Christian Research Institute, we'll send you The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World by William Dembski. To donate by phone, simply call 888-7000-CRI or by mail, P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Of course, the easiest way to give is by going to our website at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by the Christian Research Institute, a ministry supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters.
When looking at the night sky, you're not just looking at stars and planets. You're looking at the very fingerprints of God. The cosmos presents irrefutable evidence of God's design, genius, and majesty. You'll find this evidence in The Privileged Planet by Jay Richards. The Privileged Planet presents an amazing supply of evidence to show that our planet is perfectly fit not only to support life, but also to point to the existence of the giver of life. You're taken on a scientific odyssey from a history of tectonic plates and solar eclipses to our location in the Milky Way, the laws that govern the universe, and much more. It will prove that not only do science and faith mix, but science points to faith. The Privileged Planet, available on DVD right now when you call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go to equip.org.
Have you ever been asked the question, if God is good, why is there so much evil and suffering in the world? As Christians, how should we respond to this question? In his book, The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World, Dr. William Dembski writes to make peace with three claims. God, by wisdom, created the world out of nothing. God exercises particular providence in the world.
and all evil in the world ultimately traces back to human sin. In the process, Dembski brings the reader to a fresh understanding of what the end result of Christianity really means. The radical realignment of our thinking so that we see God's goodness in creation, despite the distorting effects of sin in our hearts and evil in the world. Order The End of Christianity from the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.